broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
And a great good morning to you on this March 24th. Yes, we're underwater. It's been raining on Oahu, at least across the state, under a flash flood watch through tomorrow. Pretty much, or at least the end of today for Oahu, came down pretty hard for a while. Some of the roads were closed on the windward side. They've been reopened. And, of course, today is Hawaii Junior Golf Day. Yes, and if you're wondering if it's happening, I am sure it is. Even the places where it rains a lot, like Olomana, their practice facility where Hawaii Junior Golf Day will be held is up. And it's on dry ground, and it just is a perfect place to hold it. I know because I was there last year. So if you're signed up for the Hawaii Junior Golf Day, it's Hawaii Prince, Ko'olina, Olomana, Turtle Bay, Hawaii Kai, Alawai, Navy Marine, Hilo Muni, Hualalai, Ka'anapali, Wailea Emerald and Gold Course, Kahili Course, Princeville Makai, Puakea, and Kiahuna. Have a great time. The kids love it. Registration's at 8:30 and at 9 o'clock. Everything gets underway with PGA professionals. This is co-sponsored by the Aloha Section PGA as well as the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association. Now, we've got the 38th president of the PGA of America in the clubhouse, but first, we need to thank the people who make this show possible.
The Golf Club, brought to you in part by Creative Plumbing. Call Creative Plumbing because it has to be done right. Futura Stone, for your business or residence. Pavers for your driveways and parking lots, concrete-colored floors, and decorative stone floors. And Claude Brousseau, master PGA teaching professional at Maui School of Golf. And now, here's Danielle Tucker.
And coming into the clubhouse, Ted Bishop, 38th president of the PGA of America, editorial staff and writer for Morning Read, and owner and operator of the Legends Golf Club. Welcome into the clubhouse, Ted.
Hey, thanks, Danielle. Great to be with you.
Was reading many of the articles that Ted Bishop writes for Morning Read. You can get your Morning Read in your inbox. All you have to do is go to Morning Read online and tell them that you'd like to have one delivered into your inbox. There's no charge. And then you'll be able to read from all of the great people in this world of golf writing for Morning Read, their opinions, and you can talk back. You can present your opinions. They take letters and enjoy getting feedback. One of the things that has been kind of bandied about, and Alex Maselli wrote something and kind of critical, and Ted Bishop wrote something else kind of in favor of the idea of the distance of the golf ball, what's it doing and what we should do. And, of course, a lot's been talked about rolling back the golf club, the golf ball. Jack Nicklaus, of course, started. Ted, how long ago did Jack start talking about this?
Well, I actually had some conversations with Jack back in 2013, Danielle, and I'm sure he talked about it before then as well.
Yeah, he's been a big proponent because he sees some of the great, great golf courses just getting to be too small because of the length of the golf ball. Yesterday, Dustin Johnson, who did not, he was beat in match play in this World Golf Championship that's going on now, he hit a ball 400-plus yards. Unbelievable.
Well, it is, and I think that we're really at a point in the game where this is a perfect opportunity for bifurcation. And when I say that, what I mean is I think we probably do need two golf balls. We need one that would be used at the elite level for all the tours, and then we need another one that's not going to be changed any for those recreational golfers. And, you know, I remember the first time, Danielle, that I had this conversation with Jack back in 2013, and I said to him, I just don't understand how any kind of a distance rollback is going to be a good thing for the recreational amateur players. Now, that being said, to statistics like you just gave, I think there's a potential merit right now for doing it with golf at the highest level. But obviously bifurcation is in two sets of rules is a very controversial subject. It's one that the USGA has shied away from, but really, when you look at every other sport that's being played today, the rules are bifurcated, and you have different sets of rules for competition at all different levels. So I think that we could be on the verge of this possibly in golf.
Now, tell us, what's bad about the golf ball going as far as you can hit it?
Well, I think from a tour standpoint, like you just mentioned, I don't think there's any question it's made a lot of golf courses obsolete. Although, you know, I was at the U.S. Open at Marion, and I thought the USGA did a fabulous job of setting up a championship venue that, you know, was apropos 25 or 30 years ago, and they made it work in today's modern competition with longer rough, narrower fairways, and those types of things. But, you know, the day of golf courses being in a position where they can be played at 8,500 yards at the tour level to accommodate how far some of these people hit it, you know, those days are over. And you could take Augusta National and you could look at how that property is laid out, and they're virtually landlocked, and there's no way that they could do much to lengthen holes that they already haven't, you know, dealt with. And I do think it would bring some older courses that have lost their relevancy back into play. But again, getting back to the recreational game, there is no way that the people who are out there playing the game for fun can afford to lose 25% or 30% of their distance. The game's not going to be more enjoyable for them. The game's not going to speed up because people can hit their next shot quicker because they're going to have a shorter distance to travel to the ball because they're going to take more shots to play the game. And from a golf course maintenance standpoint, you know, whether you're mowing rough or you're mowing fairway, it's there's still a cost and a time element involved. And then when you get into tee placements and you know, how you're going to deal with that, a lot of the courses that have been built like mine in the last 25 years that have got elevated tee boxes, you can't just say, well, we're going to take the tee markers, we're going to move them ahead 25 or 30 yards because they may not be on the tee box that you have now, and they may not be in a suitable position where you can actually play a hole for them. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things to consider here.
Okay, so what you're saying is the only place that distance controls should be considered is for championship golf on the PGA, LPGA, USJ, RNA National Championships, and at the Masters. Leave the rest of us alone, okay? But
that's
But you see that it's important to do it for those tours because it makes some golf courses that traditionally have really set the tone and challenge people not on distance but on savvy and control. Seve Ballesteros is a perfect example of people who can make a shot with, you know, and make it fabulous. And a lot of the guys that are at the WGC, they're not the long hitters that win. They're the ones who can get the ball into the hole. So didn't the RNA and USGA come out with a statement? And didn't Mr. Davis give Mr. Nicholas some assurances that something was going to be happening about rolling back the ball?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And I think Jack and Mike have been probably having these private conversations for several years. And there were others. I traded some texts with Tom Watson, and I know that he's firmly in the Nicholas camp that something needs to be done at the highest level. And, you know, one of the most interesting conversations I ever had with distance when I was the president of the PGA of America was at a champions dinner at the PGA Championship one year when I was seated with Tiger Woods. And, you know, we got on the subject of distance. And I thought this was a different perspective that you don't hear people talk about much when this conversation comes up. And he said that he thought that a bigger factor today, particularly on the PGA Tour, than the distance that people were driving the ball off the tee was how far tour players were hitting irons. And he said, you know, you've got guys out there today, they're hitting nine irons 195 yards. And if you watch tour golf every week, you see this. And so I think it's more of a problem than just the 451-yard tee shot that you referred to.
Yes.
It goes right all the way through the bag.
Okay. Now, the reaction from the PGA Tour and the PGA of America not that favorable. Why are they so opposed?
Well, from the PGA of America standpoint, I think they're opposed for all the same reasons that I would be opposed, as it relates to how it might affect the recreational game if you did not bifurcate the rules. You know, from the PGA Tour standpoint, you know, this is a mindset or an opinion that it would be consistent going back to discussions that I had with Tim Fincham when, you know, he was a commissioner and I was the president of the PGA. And I know Tim felt very strongly that there was no reason to monitor distance. You know, the tour had their own statistics that would support this, and I think they were also looking at you know, what the perception of their product is and how the entertainment value is. And people turn on the TV to watch Dustin Johnson hit a 450-yard drive or Rory McIlroy hit a 400-yard drive. And I think that some of that's, you know, in their mindset. But I thought in the case of the PGA of America, what was interesting to me is we did do a survey of our members, and, you know, the survey was overwhelmingly against any kind of a distance rollback. The survey came after our CEO, Pete Bevacqua, had made public statements that the PGA was going to, you know, oppose this. So I thought, not being overly critical of the PGA, but I thought you would have done the survey before you would have come out with a public statement. And there was some controversy by some people in the media as to the validity of the survey the PGA did, because I think there was no question you could vote more than one time. When this thing went out, there were no logins or passwords required. So the other interesting thing, when you look at the PGA survey, when we did that anchoring survey back in 2013, we had about 4,800 members vote, and this time the total number of votes cast was about 7,500. So you could look at that one of two ways and say, maybe I'm right in what I'm saying about multiple votes, or I don't know, maybe distance rollback was just a lot hotter topic than anchoring was.
Yeah, interesting. I don't really understand. I know the equipment industry doesn't like the idea. They want to have one ball. It seems to me that they could create two sets of balls, one for people who... But then how do you police who's playing which ball? Because I could go in and say, hey, I'm a professional. What do? Do I walk in and I show them my handicap, you know, to prove that I deserve to be able to play with a ball that can go as far as it can be hit if I strike it well? It's an interesting... I understand that saving golf courses and saving the golf course industry, the people who have to maintain very, very, very long golf courses to take care of the PGA professionals, who are rather the PGA Tour players who are out there banging the ball as far as they can go for television. It's really complicated, and yet it seems simple. And let me ask one more thing. Was there a survey done about whether or not the ball is actually going that much farther? Some people say that is not the case, that it's not really going so much farther.
Well, no, and I think that's a very astute observation on your part, because I think that kind of supports some of the resistance that the PGA Tour has, because they've got their own set of statistics that they will maintain would indicate that maybe it's not going as far as what the governing bodies would like you to believe that it is.
Well, we're in the middle of it, and we'll have to see what the USGA does. It looks like, and of course the RNA, governs the entire world except for the United States of America, governed by the USGA. I just don't know where this is going to go. I think it's a fascinating topic.
One final thing that I just want to throw in there, you know, you talked about how hard would it be to police more than one golf ball. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that you did have two different golf balls that were allowed in competition. And I get back to the English ball versus the American ball. And the English ball was a little bit smaller, and there were a lot of players that would use that when they played in the British Open. Not that long ago. And I say not that long ago, I don't know, 20 years ago.
Right.
And so you actually conducted a major championship where players had the option to use one of two balls. But I maintain there are ways and standards that you can create, that certainly the people that who are playing in those elite competitions are for certain playing with the correct golf ball.
Excellent. Well, I guess what's in the next player or the, in this question is the USGA and RNA and what they're going to come out with and what they're going to say. They are the governing body. They would be the ones that says, this is the ball you're going to play with.
Yeah, well, and I would say this in fairness to the USGA and the RNA, and I know one of our mutual friends is Jeff Shackelford,
Yeah. And
Jeff was very critical of the PGA and the PGA Tour both for making their comments public before, honestly, we really even know for sure what the USGA and the RNA are actually thinking. I think that's a valid comment.
That's very good, because this is still in the works. It hasn't, and it's like you're creating this fervor over something that hasn't really been presented to be addressed yet by people to actually make a vote on. Very good question. There's so much going on in the world of golf right now. We've got, of course, our Hawaii Junior Golf Day, as you heard at the beginning of the show. And then we've got Drive Chip Putt registrations open again for next year. And it's coming up next weekend at the Masters, Augusta National, that is. So it's played a week before the Sunday before the guys actually go out and start their practice rounds and get on the course to play the Masters. You, Ted Bishop, 38th president of the PGA of America and the editorials and staff and writer for Morning Read, owner and operator of the Legends Golf Club, you were instrumental in creating Drive, Chip, and Putt with Augusta National, with the all the different bodies of golf. You really worked hard to get this accomplished.
Yeah, I was very pleased to be the president of the PGA during the inaugural Drive, Chip, and Putt competition in 2014. And, you know, it's been a great thing to watch. And I've actually hosted local qualifiers each and every year since then at my facility. So it's certainly become a big deal.
It has. And are you enjoying the big deal that it's become? Did you have any trepidations about how it's progressing?
Yeah, you know, I think the interesting thing in the beginning, we viewed Drive, Chip, and Putt to be a growth of the game program for juniors, and I think it's kind of evolved a little bit away from that now to where it has become what I would call a skills contest for elite juniors with a tremendous prize out there at the end of the day, and that being the opportunity to go to Augusta National and compete in the finals. So I don't know how many new juniors it's actually bringing into the game. I think, at my facility, I actually see some entry-level juniors shy away from getting involved in the Drive, Chip, and Putt contest because, you know what, it takes a lot of courage to get out there in front of a bunch of people and hit a tee shot or hit putts and hit chip shots when maybe you're not very skilled. So there's a little bit of an intimidation factor, I think, that maybe works against some of the entry-level juniors. But, I mean, you know, all in all, it's a great program. One thing I would like to kind of throw in there on the topic of junior golf is I've been very excited about this pace of play pilot program that we've implemented in Indiana, and it kind of triggered my thoughts when I heard all your conversation about the junior golf tournaments going on in Hawaii this weekend. But, you know, our Indiana High School Athletic Association became very engaged in this process when we put a steering committee together and we decided we needed to confront this problem because we felt like pace of play at the junior golf level was really getting out of hand. And a couple of key things that we're doing here in Indiana that I think people are starting to listen to all over the United States is we are developing a testing component for high school players where they actually have to view a 20-minute video that is going to be divided into four segments that's going to be on golf course management, that's going to be on pre-shot routines, it's going to be on putting green practices, and then the fourth one's going to be on equipment management. And at the end of each one of these segments, there's a testing component, and both the coaches and the players have to watch this, view it, pass the testing component before they're able to compete in the first leg of our Indiana High School state tournaments for both the boys and girls level. And then we've also thrown in a pilot program where we're putting a maximum time frame of 2 hours and 15 minutes on a 9-hole round of golf or 9 holes in an 18-hole round. And basically what we're saying to players is this is the maximum allowable time that we deem a reasonable 9-hole round to take place. And if you can't get it done in that period of time, then you're going to pick your ball up at the end of 2 hours and 15 minutes, and we're going to prorate your score, and you're going to be done. Because as operators, we're seeing too many of these junior tournaments take 5.5 and 6 hours to play.
And that's just silly.
It is, but it's happening.
No, I understand. I mean, you know, a lot of kids watch television, and they watch the professionals, and they
sure.
want to emulate everything they're doing. They say, oh, he does this, and he does that. And they get set into it, and parents, they're watching television, and they're telling their kids, this is how you should do it. And instead of the kids going out and having fun and developing skills and moving at a pace that a child would, you know, move at if they were playing a game, they're moving very deliberately and very slowly. And I don't know. I can't help but agree with you, because a six-hour round would drive me absolutely nuts. Yes. We're talking with Ted. Yes, go ahead, Ted.
Yeah, no, and I think the thing that we've viewed to be the biggest problem is this. We think that it's an issue for the future of the game. And we feel that if juniors get accustomed to taking 5 or 6 hours or half that amount to play a nine-hole round as teenagers or junior players, when they do become adults, they may decide that they don't want to continue to play golf because they view it to be a 5 or 6 hour activity.
That's
and we just don't feel that you're going to be able to all of a sudden flip a switch on if you're a player who's played in that amount of time at some point later in life and just say, okay, I'm going to become a faster player. So as much, I'd be as guilty as the next PGA professional. As many golf lessons as I've given Danielle, I've spent a lot more time talking about swing mechanics and fundamentals and all that than I ever really did try to teach juniors in particular pace of play principles. And that's what we're trying to do here in Indiana.
That's awesome. And our Hawaii State Junior Golf, or our Hawaii Junior Golf Day, is really to bring kids that have never played to the golf course. PGA professionals are there and teaching them. So this is a real Grow the Game initiative. They kids that don't know anything about the game come out for Hawaii Junior Golf Day. It's free, and have a great time. By the way, registration's at 8:30, and it starts at 9 o'clock. And if you'd like to know where, it's hsjga.org. Thank you so much for being on the show, Ted.
Always my pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Aloha. Something that you probably would like to know about is some of the new rules that are coming out for next year. Not this year. 2018 doesn't count. 2019, however, there will be fewer rules of golf. They made it official that starting next year, you may repair spike marks on the green. You may remove loose impediments in the bunker. You can drop the ball from the knee height, not up there by the shoulder where it goes bouncing around. You can from the knee height, but not this year. That's next year. You can take stroke and distance from out of bounds, and accidentally move ball while looking for it will not count against you. We're going to come back and delve into Golf Kitchen Punta Mita with the woman who founded Golf Kitchen many years ago, a friend of mine, Diana DeLucia. We'll be back right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club. We're busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screens. Your plumbing can't wait. It doesn't matter if your restaurant's water line broke at 10 a.m. or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home. You need your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's Creative Plumbing! 841-2837. Your experts on call.
After a year of searching, I found the perfect building for my new 30,000-foot showroom and office. I asked the architect what to do about the flooring. She just smiled and said, call Futurastone. They can turn a dirty, bumpy slab into a work of art. Super low maintenance, yet tough as nails. It's not paint. It's polished concrete, as seen in Architectural Digest. Call Futurastone at 841-7433. It needs to be done right, on time, and on budget.
There's nothing like a good round of golf. Want to have more fun and play better? Golf is easier with coaching from PGA Master Teaching Professional Claude Rousseau. Claude will simplify your game. Scratch golfer or just beginner, two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, Claude is at Maui School of Golf at the Kahili Course on Maui. You'll get great results and improve. Call Claude at 808-870-1422 or email him at claude@mauischoolofgolf.com. That's Claude Rousseau at 808-870-1422. Have more fun and stop buying lunches for your group.
Wow, what a beautiful day. Let's go back in the clubhouse and listen to Danielle Tucker.
Diana DeLucia, founder, editor-in-chief, Golf Kitchen, a magazine, a book series. We're focusing on the magazine and what she's created in conjunction with the magazine. She is an award-winning food photographer, executive member of the board of directors of the Foreign Press Association celebrating its 100th anniversary. Today we are talking about the inaugural Golf Kitchen Punta Mita. In conjunction with St. Regis and Four Seasons, the prestigious culinary and golf event in the private golf club and resort industry globally, and it's completely open to you. Golf Kitchen Cup is a two-day golf tournament in conjunction with the culinary event that's bringing together the chefs from around the private golf club world. And it's just going to be awesome. Diana DeLucia, welcome into the clubhouse.
Good to be here, Danielle.
CEO, you are so much in charge of, but really not so much a CEO because this is a founding operation. This is Diana DeLucia. She does the entire magazine pretty much by herself. Sometimes, like we've had Doug, whose last name went right out of my mind. Doug Blair. He's going to be at Punta Mita. He wrote one of your fabulous articles that's coming out in the summer edition of Golf Kitchen magazine. He's going to be. Yes. So, you know, when people say CEO, there really isn't a team of people. You do this on your own.
Yeah, that's right. From Golf Club World to Golf Kitchen, my first two coffee table books, the concept just really took off. And the chefs and I had a meeting at Kiwa Island after our event there last year, and we thought a magazine would be a great idea to continue to feature the great talent in the private golf club and resort industry, and it's turning out to be a big hit.
It is a big hit. The fact that Four Seasons and St. Regis at Punta Mita working in conjunction with one another, bringing this all together, bringing the chef in. I'm just impressed the way everything has rolled out, coming at to Punta Mita on April 26th. And if you go to Golf Kitchen Punta Mita, you can see where you can actually register to go. The package includes three nights at St. Regis or Four Seasons, with breakfast included, participation in the 2 days of the golf tournament, the kitchen experience with it, access to all of the culinary events according to the schedule. So you can kind of pick and choose which one you want to go to. Do I want to go to Sabonic? Do I want to go to Kiwa? Do I want to go to Sanctity? It's really special.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great event. I'm really honored to partner with Punta Mita and their developer, Dine, on this event at Four Seasons and St. Regis at the Punta Mita Resort. It's just amazing, and it's just an incredible event in the industry as a whole. I mean, globally, nothing like this has been done before. It's really hard to get the private clubs to participate in anything. And on this level, it's just such an honor to have Wingfoot, Sabonic, Kiwa Island, Sankaty Head, and all the other clubs that really support Golf Kitchen.
I just have a list here. The host chef is Pato Persico of Punta Mita. Doug Blair, the executive chef of Cacique at Kiwa, he'll be there, as well as Jose Carle, who was over at Royal Isabella. until the hurricane destroyed Puerto Rico, pretty much. They've reopened Royal Isabella. That's fantastic.
I know. It's been a long road for them, but I heard the course is in pretty good shape, and I'm not sure if they've reopened the restaurant yet, but I'm sure I'll find out soon from Jose Carle.
Yeah, and Jose Carle went at Doug Blair's invitation to stay and work at Kiowa Island Club while everything was, you know, going crazy in Puerto Rico as people tried to put their lives back together. And Doug held out his hand as a chef to another chef and said, here, I know exactly what you can do. Now sous chef and executive recruiter, Jose Carle must feel blessed. Chrissy Bennett, executive sous chef from Winged Foot, is going to be there. Joseph Klages, Sabonic Golf Club, is going to be there. Damian Gilchrist, executive chef of Sanctity Head, he'll be there. And one of the ultimate celebrity chefs of Mexico is coming, Lalo Palazuelos. He's going to be there. A handsome man. Man. There are also women who are going to be there, including Esther Sanchez of Four Seasons and Jesus Duran of the St. Regis. Will be all part of this, bringing out this culinary extravaganza that's Punta Mita, Golf Kitchen Punta Mita. And how are they going to do this with so many chefs in the kitchen? what do they plan to do?
Well, they have the schedule is created in such a way so that every golf club that's participating will have at least two events. And you'll be able to choose. So if you would like to have a dinner with Doug Blair from Cacique at Kiowa Island Club, you can choose to book that one in. But you need to be fast to book these lunches and dinners in because I'm pretty sure there's only about 60 places for each dinner.
Wow. And then
Lunch or dinner, yes.
So breakfast will be, I like this, the tail of the whale. What is that? That's where breakfast is going to be served.
The Tail of the Whale is the restaurant. I'm not sure which course it's on, but it's on the course that has that famous hole, the island green, and the natural island green. And it overlooks the ocean and the course. It's a beautiful restaurant, multi-level, open air. So it's a great place for breakfast. In fact, that was where Golf Kitchen Punta Mita was born.
Where you were sitting there looking out at, and don't you have to get to that island green? This is by boat.
Yes, I wanted to go out there so bad, but I just didn't have the time, and you have to kind of wait. You can walk out there if the tide's out, I'm told.
I see, right.
Yeah.
But if it's not and you're playing, you got to take a little boat. That's for people who are afraid of getting on the ocean. That adds another element to their golf game. So in conjunction with Golf Kitchen Magazine, golfkitchen.com, it promises another wonderful event. I just love how Punta Mita has gotten behind this inaugural Golf Kitchen Punta Mita gastronomic extravaganza, first ever Golf Kitchen Golf Cup. Now, this is where the golf aspect of it for guys, I know Mel Soule was on the show. He's a great coach, a golf coach, and a former professional golfer. He said, if I wasn't so busy in April, I would be there. All of these guys are coming together. You can learn about the club history, have an opportunity to taste the cuisine of places that we can't get into. But because of what you and Punta Mita are doing together, we can go there. And it's actually quite reasonable what they're offering. It's $1,700 approximately, if you don't golf, and $1,900 if you do golf. So the entire 2 days on the course, both of the Jack Nicklaus signature golf courses, Bahia and Pacifico, will be used for this tournament. Real special, and it's on the west coast of Mexico, so it's really easily accessible for all of us on the western or here in Hawaii in the Pacific area. And for people on the east coast, they can easily get to it too.
And if you book relatively quickly and you're playing golf, you will be maybe have one of those chefs on your team.
How many do you know? I didn't know that. Some of the golfers, I mean, the chefs are golfers. How many?
I think there's probably about six. I know Doug Blair and Jose Carle are playing. I know that from Kiowa. And I know that Damien Gilchrist from Sankaty Head is playing. And Joe Clages is playing as well. So, and I'm not sure if Pato is playing, but I know he can play. So I think we'd probably see him out there as well.
That's excellent. If you just want to play golf, the participation in the 2 days of the golf tournament and the kitchen experience. So you have access to the culinary events according to the agenda, so you'd have to sign up for which ones you want to be at. Then that is almost, it's $920. And that's taxes, service charge, all included. You just wouldn't be staying there. You can travel there on your own if you know somebody in the area you'd like to stay there. So there's lots of different ways to participate in the inaugural Golf Kitchen Punta Mita Gastronomic Extravaganza and the first ever Golf Kitchen Golf Cup. This is unbelievable that I don't think we've expressed it enough that from the private golf course kitchens, private clubs like Sabonic are reaching out to other private golf courses and doing an event, a public event. Is this the first ever?
It is definitely the first ever event that brings the private club industry chefs together. We had our first one at Wingfoot, as you know, and then the second one we had at Tuftique at Kiowa Island Club. Everybody's really enjoying it, and we just want to continue and develop it. I was talking to Doug Blair yesterday, and he was just telling me how excited they all are and how proud they are to be involved and to be able to showcase what they do and really be acknowledged for that culinary excellence.
Sounds like it'd be fun to be the first champion of the Golf Kitchen Cup. That would be awesome.
I know.
A two-day golf tournament at Punta Mita. The chefs that are going, Executive Chef Pato Persico is the host of Punta Mita. He is the executive chef there. Alongside him will be the executive chefs and teams from Sabonic, Cacique at Kiowa, Sankaty Head Golf Club, Winged Foot, Club Bosque Real, and many more chefs, men and women, coming together to create a culinary experience extraordinaire there at Punta Mita. I just wish I could be there. Are you taking your entire family?
I am, actually. My family is flying over from Australia, and my kids are coming in from Boston.
You're going to have a great time, you know. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think I'm really excited. I don't know what I'm going to wear yet, but I'll figure that out.
Well, yeah, it'll be a resort casual, so your suitcase doesn't have to be too heavy. When is your next Golf Kitchen magazine coming?
There will be magazines on site of the spring issue. But I will be doing a split order this time. We'll have some previewed at the event, and then the rest will go out after the event. So okay. I'd say probably mid to late May.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. Who's on the cover?
Anthony Giacopinello, the executive chef, one of my favorite people from Sabonic in Southampton.
So all of this is taking place at the end of April. It's Thursday the 26th, Friday the 27th, Saturday the 28th, and then everybody says aloha, the Golf Kitchen brunch at Kapuri Beach Club on Sunday the 29th. We're starting off with a welcome dinner. This is being produced and created by Sankaty Head. And just remember that all of these guys are working right now to create what they're going to create and present as their culinary masterpieces here at the Golf Kitchen Punta Mita, at Punta Mita in conjunction with St. Regis and Four Seasons. Sounds like I'd like to be there, but this time I'll have to wait for the second one. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you, Danielle.
Aloha. We're going to come back and work on our game. Our game, you know, when you have that lack of confidence, you feel like you don't know whether you can work any harder at your game, but you've got to keep on working. And it was interesting. I was listening to Jordan Spieth. He lost yesterday, had a terrible double bogey first hole, double bogey second hole. And this was billed as the event of the day to watch he was up against Reed, and having just, and then everything just fell apart. And afterwards he said, you know, I'm having problem with my, basically his distance control, his just being able to hit the ball the proper distance. Imagine being Jordan Spieth and having been at the top of his game going into the Open, and all that he did to win the Open Championship. And now here we are almost a year later, and he can't find his game. What do you do? What do you do with your mind? Because your mind is 90% of your game. How you feel about your game. And David McKenzie, Golf State of Mind, is with us next. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Have you ever seen a building or a magazine photo or traveled to a place that captured your imagination? Futuristone's Master Craftsman can transform your vision into a reality. Does your project call out for a permeable pavement, parking area, pool deck, plaza, or grand entry? Bring us your plans. Futuristone's unique outdoor products and services can turn your resort, building, or home's exterior into an oasis that will last a lifetime. Call Futuristone, 841-7440 across Hawaii. Futuristone, only the best. As we jet from place to place, we buckle in knowing they maintain their planes daily. They don't put off repairs till the next month. Your plumbing can't wait. It doesn't matter if your water line, sewer line, or fire line broke at the worst possible moment. Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii. Big business or commercial center, high-rise, townhouse, or hen house. You need your job done now. Done right. That's Creative Plumbing!
Your experts on call.
Do you have a child or know someone who does who wants to learn how to play golf? They can begin to learn for free. On March 24th at 15 great courses, new and beginning golfers can receive instruction from PGA professionals at no charge. Hawaii Junior Golf Day is sponsored by the Aloha Section PGA and the Hawaii State Junior Golf Association. To sign up, go to hsjga.org or call 808-532-0559.
Ah, here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
Some of the courses where you can go, Hawaii Junior Golf Day today, Hawaii Prince, Ko'olina, Olomala, Turtle Bay, Hawaii Kai, Alawai, Navy Marine, Hilo Muni, Hualalai, Ka'anapali, Wailea Emerald and Gold, Kahili, Princeville, Makai, Puakea Golf Course, and Keohuna Golf Club. They're all participating, and it is free, and it's open for juniors who've never touched a club. And at some courses, for instance, where Claude Brousseau is at the Kahili course, David Havens is going to come over. He's spare for change, and what he's got is golf clubs, and he'll cut them down. He's really pretty amazing. He cuts them down and creates a club for the kid, little tiny ones. You know, they're not even 2 feet tall, it seems. And they've got a golf club, and they're very excited to be able to use that club and hit the ball. Now, just to give you a preview of what's coming up, next week we've got the pre-masters, right? And then we've got the masters, and then we've got the Lotte at Ko'olina, and then we've got the mid-pack open, all right? And we'll be at the Mid-Pacific Country Club. That's all coming up in April. But in May, we have the Jenny Kay. I'll be back at Mid-Pacific Country Club doing the show. I was straight from the Mid-Pacific Country Club. And what they have, the Jenny Kay Invitational, is just a little ways away, but what's even sooner, the women's division at the Mid-Pacific Country Club is working to create the 68th annual. And for the second year in a row, they've got merit scholarships for junior and senior high school girls who are in the game. You don't have to necessarily be a Jenny Kay entrant. So, you know, if you're not playing in the Jenny Kay, that doesn't mean that you can't apply for one of these scholarships. You can get one of the applications online, Mid-Pacific Country Club website, or at the Pro Shop of Mid-Pac. Last year, they awarded 15 $500 scholarships. They were funded by the T-Box sponsors at the Jenny K. So giving back is all part of it. If you're interested, go to the Mid-Pacific Country Club website, and you'll find the application for one of those scholarships. All right, we want to go into the mind of the golfer. So many of them need help, including Rory McIlroy. He needed help. He couldn't putt for his life. Jordan Spieth is having a real hard time. Putts that you expected to drop last year went right in. This year he can't seem to hit the cup. And so David McKenzie, who created Golf State of Mind, is in with us, and he has an article that's really good. Welcome into the clubhouse, David.
Hi, Danielle. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome to be here. GolfStateOfMind.com is where you can find David McKenzie, a scratch golfer, golf coach, creator of Golf State of Mind. And he was talking about what Brad Faxon did to help Rory McIlroy and seven tips that came out of that. How did that come about, that Brad Faxon, Rory McIlroy assistance lesson?
I think that Rory knows that Brad Faxon's one of the best putters in the game, and I think that they just, it was just a casual one-hour putting match. That's what I've gleaned from what I read, and I think Rory asked a lot of questions. I think Brad actually won the little match that they had, but I think that Rory had just started to doubt himself on the putting greens. I mean, he was 124th in strokes gained putting before that week, and wanted to get back into, you know, the right mental state on the greens. I think that a lot of these players, when they're putting well, they don't know where they're putting their focus, and it's easy, you know, you don't question it. But when it starts to go badly, or when they're not putting as well, that's when they start to overthink everything, and they're thinking about their stroke. And I think Brad Faxon's pointers, you reminded Rory about the artistry of putting and where it's really important to be putting your focus and how to measure the success of putts.
Interesting, because before the Arnold Palmer Invitational, Rory McIlroy hadn't won anything for a long time. He was recovering from injury. He was trying to get his game back. And when you said, you know, we don't think about it when the putt drops. You know, you stroke the ball, it goes in, and you're like, yeah, I knew that was going to happen. But when you can't make it happen, you're like, what did I do before that made it go in? We don't think about what we're doing at the moment. We're just doing it. But these pointers are really very insightful. So let's start with, as the article goes on, Brad Faxon is an artist with a putter. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, great putters aren't thinking, you know, they're not technical. You're not thinking about putting mechanics or, you know, even emotion as well. It's like great putters are just able to see and engage with what is in front of them. And then without thinking about it, just let it happen. Let their body move in the way that, you know, their eyes are telling them to do so. So that's what I mean by that. It's about feel. It's about visualization. And I, you know, I work with a number of tour players, and, you know, you tend to think that these guys, you know exactly where to put their focus, you know, to maximize their chances of success with a putt. And I thought that that's why this article was worth writing, because, you know, no matter what level of player you are, putting, you know, is ultimately, I would argue that it's the most mental part of the, or it's the area of the game where the mental game has the biggest influence, because there's not a whole lot of, you know, your athletic ability doesn't really come into play like it does with the long game.
Yes, so, and then there's the reading of the green. You know, how do Michelle Weed decides how she's going to hold the club now, just the way she feels that day. Which grip is working for her on that day when she's figuring it out before the round starts. She goes to the practice green. She uses one grip. That doesn't work. She tries this grip. She's probably the only person I know of that changes her grip so often. But it's because now she's starting to feel the putting stroke rather than thinking the putting game.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, you know, they're playing under such pressure. You know, they have to feel comfortable, and putting is obviously, you know, it's a game of confidence. You know, when you're putting well, the hole seems as big as a bucket, and you feel like you can't miss. And you know, it's the combination of confidence, being able to stay emotionally, you know, neutral, not giving putts different values. Oh, this putt is for birdie. You know, if I make this, then this is going to happen for me in the future. You know, and you get emotional, you feel more, you know, and performance anxiety there. You feel more tense. You start overthinking, and then you put a bad stroke on it. So yes, it's about feeling comfortable. Is really important.
In your article, you quote Faxon as saying, it's almost like I start my stroke before my eyes get back to the ball.
Exactly. Well, one error that I see in a lot of amateurs is kind of, you know, freezing over the ball and overthinking, when really, you know, it has to be a very subconscious, reactive movement. And we don't want players thinking about how the putter's going back or how far it's going back and how that's going to transfer, you know, to the putt. It's got to be, you know, just like a child would play. And in fact, that's something that Rory said after that, you know, after the time he spent with Brad Faxon, or after that tournament, that he got back to putting like a child would putt. You know, a young child playing this game is not going to be thinking about their mechanics during their stroke or thinking about the importance of making or missing a putt. They're just seeing the target, seeing the putt they're intending to hit, and then hitting it down that line, or doing their best to hit it down that line. And so that was what that was about. A lot of good putters, you know, they're so focused on the line and what they see in their mind's eye that you know, they actually start their backstroke before they really focus in on the golf ball.
There you go. And it's interesting what I thought when you were saying that. A lot of people like to point out what you did. If the putt doesn't go in, then they want to tell you, well, you know, you took that putter too far back. And then you're starting to, it's like, don't say that to me, because I really don't want to think about it. I want to feel what I'm doing. I don't want to think about what my body does. Thank you for your comment. But now I'm getting really mechanical and getting a little bit more uncomfortable. So if somebody doesn't want to hear it, it's best not to comment when you're playing with people, unless they ask you for input.
Right.
It's really...
Unless you're playing match play against them.
Unless you're...
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Routine is the measure of success. And I'm going to quote your line here. I'm talking with David McKenzie, golfstateofmind.com, and you can find this article, The 7 Tips, that came out of an hour putting game between Brad Faxon and Rory McIlroy, in which Rory was watching Brad. Brad won. Routine is the measure of success. Rory said that one of the most important putting tips he learned from Brad Faxon was a philosophical one. Can you expound on that now?
Yes. Yeah, so whether it's a putt, a chip, a full shot, I would always want my players to measure the success of that shot by the process, where they put their focus before, during, and after the shot. And building consistency around that, identifying what it is that you need to focus on, what connects you with your best shots. You know, for some players, you know, who are more technical, it might actually be like, you know, something they think about during their, you know, their backswing, or, you know, a lot of players are more visual and feel oriented, and so they focus more on those things. But, you know, there's got to be that sequence that you follow for every shot. And whether you hit a good shot or not such a good shot, it was successful if you put your attention in the right place at the right time during the routine. So that just keeps you focused on what you have control over, and those things are the things that you've identified are going to give you the best chance of a good outcome.
And so repetition in your movements around the green, looking at the lay of the land, or if you don't like to do that, or just walking up, setting your putter, and then striking the ball, just having that routine that you repeat over and over again?
Exactly. You've got to start becoming more aware of where you're putting your focus during, you know, from the time that you start your routine to the end of it, and making sure that you're doing those things that you know are going to give you the best chance of hitting a good putt. And so, you know, I have a mental game scorecard, which you can download for free from my website, golfstateofmind.com. And that is essentially helps you measure the success of every shot by your process. And so you move away from thinking about outcomes and consequences and what this putt's going to mean for me if I make it, to really just trying to achieve what you know you have complete control over, which is your thinking. So we do have control over where we put our attention during the routine. So if you've got something to fill that last few seconds of the routine by, you know, by focusing on the visual, focusing on the feel, focusing on a deep breath perhaps, then that is part of your routine, and that should be something that you measure the success of the shot by, so you don't have time for any negative thoughts or doubts or to creep in and ruin the fluidity of your stroke or your swing.
All of this is David McKenzie's GolfStateOfMind.com article, and it pretty much sums up seven key points that Brad Faxon and Rory McIlroy were working when Rory went to Brad for some help because he couldn't find his putting stroke. And I thought this one, you can find it all at GolfStateOfMind.com, managing tension. And we're talking about not so much tension of the body, but grip pressure, which I suppose is tension of the body.
Yeah, it is. And that's such an important thing to become aware of in putting, because when we feel nervous, you know, as part of that, you know, stress response, tension in the muscles, you know, increases. You start to grip the putter tighter without knowing it, and that goes, you know, up your forearms into your biceps. So, and that just destroys, you know, your feel for the putter head, the sort of the pendulum motion of the putter that we know that it needs to, you know, to have to really, you know, make solid contact with the ball. So that was one of the things that, you know, one of the lessons from Brad Faxon there was, you know, he's very aware of any tension in his hands and in his arms. So that would be a good thing for your listeners to implement into their pre-putt routine, is when you're rehearsing that putt, just making sure there's no tension there.
Jordan Spieth is having quite a difficult time right now with his game. Just kind of in general, but also on the green, places where everyone expects him to make a five-footer, he's not making them anymore. Have you been observing his progress in getting his game back? He said he's working hard.
Yeah, I've heard a little about what's happening with Jordan's game, and I know he's you know, he's way down in strokes game putting, and that's usually a strength of his game, especially from you know, the 20-25-foot range. And he's probably falling into the trap that Rory fell into before the Arnold Palmer, was just overthinking. And I think I read somewhere that he's got like a five-step plan before he even thinks about pace and direction of the putt, which, you know, doesn't sound very, you know, very artistic to me. And I know that that's a big part of why Jordan Spieth is so successful, is that he is usually very artistic about his putting. And he's probably just overthinking it, but I'm sure he'll turn it around, no doubt.
Yeah, I loved how he said, "I don't know when. I'm just going to keep working hard. I don't know when it's going to turn around." I mean, who does? You know, people say, "Well, how long do you think this is going to take? You know, what are you expecting?" It's like all the bookies want to know so they can place their bets. Before we talk about Tiger Woods and his game, I have a question. We are KPUA Hilo, K-O-R-L, Y-N-I, K-O-N-I, Lanai City, K-T-O-H, Kalaheo. So, Tiger Woods, amazing, okay? I'm amazed. I am happy. I am just watching him play. Watching his swing speed is amazing. Watching him play his game, getting it back, getting more comfortable on the course, getting into competition on the course, all of these things are bringing his game back out. But one thing that I've noticed, and it used to happen in his last almost successful comeback, he was playing at Greenbrier, and he was doing so well, and then things fell apart. And oftentimes, Tiger Woods would make the cut and then have a terrible Saturday, so terrible that he would be so far down there was no way he could recover on Sunday, although he didn't give up. He still tried. What do you think is going on with Tiger when he's like at that clutch moment he was last weekend, when he could have maybe You know, everything turned out the way it was supposed to, I suppose. But there were things that Tiger did that seemed inexplicable to so many people. Can you give us some insight into Tiger Woods?
Do you mean his decision making in the final stages of the tournament?
Yes, inexplicable. We didn't understand his decision making in the final stages of the tournament. I suppose we could talk for an hour about Tiger Woods, but I don't have that much time.
Yeah, I mean, for a start, I think he's just shown what a mentally tough individual he is. I mean, written off by most of the golfing world, and when he had the yips, and it's amazing how he's been able to recover from that, and now he finds himself competing for tournaments. In terms of mental toughness, there's not many people that are, or players that are better than him at that. But yeah, I heard how he described what happened on that last hole and whether he should have hit a 3-wood, and I think he ended up hitting a 2-iron. But at the time, he didn't feel comfortable hitting that shot. And I suppose he thought that, weighing up the odds of, missing, I can't remember the 18th hole there, but whether there was a lot of trouble left or right. But, I think, the lesson is that generally speaking, you got to go with the shot that you feel most comfortable with. I mean, Tiger Woods is Tiger Woods, and he's won so many tournaments and he's won so many majors that I don't know why, he was thinking that, second place, would be okay, but and not just go for it. But he obviously just didn't feel 100% comfortable in that shot.
And your observations, when we talked before the show about what you'd like to talk about is some of the things were Tiger Woods. And your observations as a mental game coach, I suppose, would be the most, I'd like to hear them.
Well, I mean, just going back to what I said there, so many players would have just been full of doubt and not have been able to recover from where his game was. I mean, we can all remember the shots that he was hitting around the green and some of the drives that he was hitting. And, clearly, he was in a lot of pain and playing in a lot of pain. But, for me, from my perspective, and, I work with a lot of tour players and, who have doubt, and, we work on that and we work on building self-belief. But, to be 1,000 in the world and, just to keep believing, keep believing that he can be back there and he can win another PGA Tour event, win another major. I mean, it's fantastic for everybody that's involved in golf that he's back. And I have a huge, huge amount of admiration for, for how he can, pull himself, how he's pulled himself back.
Absolutely.
And it's great to see.
And when you were saying that, I was thinking, remember the 3 chips into the water? He couldn't get it across the water and he hit the water 3 times. One after another, he was demonstrating. And I thought, my God, the embarrassment factor of that moment would be enough to send anyone screaming into the forest.
Exactly. And now his short game's, one of the best out there. I think he led the tournament in strokes gained around the green. No doubt his short game is back.
No doubt. And I really appreciate your time. David McKenzie, tell us where we can find you.
You can find me at golfstateofmind.com. I've got I've written a huge number of articles over the years, and I've written some digital products. One of them, on the topic of putting is the mental game of putting and how to improve your mental game of putting and build confidence and build a process that is, more reactive and subconscious. And, so that's available there. Twitter is at Golf State of Mind. And there's a Golf State of Mind Facebook fan page as well.
Excellent.
Where I post all my articles.
Excellent. And you post all your articles there too.
I
am loath to ask you the question because often coaches tell me I can't say. But can you tell us who you coach, the professionals?
Oh, I work with, exactly. A lot of the players I work with don't like to say they're working with a mental coach because that somehow, admits weakness. But, I work with players on the PGA Tour, European Tour, Symetra Tour, web.com, And you know, I feel very, very fortunate to be, you know, close. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be a good enough player to do it myself, but this is, you know, for me, the next best thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. You're right in the mix, and you know you're able to, you know, emotionally and mentally what it what it's like being there. You may not have played at that level, but everybody has the same, we have the same feelings. And when you get into positions like that, you can relate to them and help them come out. Thank you, David McKenzie.
Exactly.
Golf State of Mind.
Thank you very much, Danielle.
Aloha. Kevin Markham's checking in, golf photographer and writer, editor of Destination Golf, author of Hooked, An Amateur's Guide to the Golf Courses of Ireland, and Driving the Green. And we're going to talk with him right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
After a year of searching, I found the perfect building for my new 30,000-foot showroom and office. I asked the architect what to do about the flooring. She just smiled and said, call Futurestone. They can turn a dirty, bumpy slab into a work of art. Super low maintenance, yet tough as nails. It's not paint. It's polished concrete, as seen in Architectural Digest. Call Futurestone at 841-7433. It needs to be done right, on time, and on budget.
We're busier than ever, and some things can just wait. Washing the car, painting the study, or cleaning the screen.
Your plumbing can't wait.
It doesn't matter if your restaurant's water line broke at 10 a.m. or your building's hot water heater blew up at midnight.
Call Creative Plumbing at 841-2837 across Hawaii.
Big business or high-rise, retail store, or home. You need your job done now, done right. Your 50-foot sewer pipe won't fix itself. That's Creative Plumbing!
841-2837.
Your experts on call.
There's nothing like a good round of golf. Want to have more fun and play better? Golf is easier with coaching from PGA Master Teaching Professional Claude Rousseau. Claude will simplify your game. Scratch golfer or just beginner, two-time Aloha Section PGA Teacher of the Year, Claude is at Maui School of Golf at the Kahili Course on Maui. You'll get great results and improve. Call Claude at 808-870-1422 or email him at claude@mauischoolofgolf.com. That's Claude Rousseau at 808-870-1422. Have more fun and stop buying lunches for your group.
You scope out the sand traps. You size up the green. You're eyeing the flag. Now it's time to choose a club, but you don't know which one to choose?
That's when you turn to Danielle Tucker. Now, back to The Golf Club.
Okay, today is Hawaii Junior Golf Day. That's today. On June 5th, it's Women's Golf Day. And it's also for women who want to learn to play, women who play golf, women who want to socialize with other women who play golf but don't know where to meet them. And right now, we've got Mauna Kea, Prince Makai, and Ka'anapali signed up to be Women's Golf Day locations. If you're a golf course interested in becoming a Women's Golf Day location on June 5th, the early bird special to sign up by March 26th, you save 20%. Instead of $99, you get paid $79. So it's a really good, you get placement on the homepage, unique profile page, you get marketing toolkits, multimedia coverage. So this is the time to sign up and be a Women's Golf Day location because the women really enjoy it. I know because Ka'anapali and Princeville Makai did it last year and everybody had a blast. Let's bring him into the clubhouse now, all the way from Ireland. I'm not sure which county he's in, but I'm just in love with Ireland. I've got to go there one day. Welcome, Kevin Markham, our golf photographer and writer, our editor of Destination Golf, author of Hooked in its third edition, An Amateur's Guide to Golf Courses of Ireland. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Danielle.
Which county are you in?
I'm in County Wexford, so I'm basically the bottom right county.
Bottom right. Everybody look at your map. I hear so much about County Kerry, you know, and I want to start with the remodeled 18th that you were going to go look at Ballybunion.
When is
it going to be revealed?
Well, it's officially opening on the 1st of April. It's there and it's open and people can go and look at it. I don't think it's not in play yet. I think from the point of view of the golf club, they did a huge amount of work a couple of years ago ahead of the Jacques L'Eglise trophy. And they basically redid all of their greens. So they changed all the grasses and then the 18th. It's their 125th anniversary this year. So you know, they're sort of continuing the theme with making some changes. And the 18th has always been one of those holes that people love or hate. I mean, personally, I loved it. But when you're on the fairway playing into the green, you can't see the putting surface. You can see the flag, but nothing else. And a lot of people didn't like that. So now they've changed the green considerably. They've moved it. And it's far, far easier to see what you're hitting into. So it's going to be fascinating. I haven't actually had a chance to go down and see it yet. I'll be down there in a couple of weeks.
So that's in County Kerry, castle ruins near the town. Ballybunion was the host of the Irish Open in 2000 and the Palmer Cup in 2004. Is there something coming up at Ballybunion in the near future?
No, nothing at the moment. As you say, they had the Irish Open, and now that Rory McIlroy is pushing very hard for more links courses to be hosting the Irish Open, there's a possibility it'll go back there, but nothing in the pipeline quite yet. But then you've got up further up the coast, you've got Lahinch, which is another of the favourites of many bucket list travellers, and that certainly has put its name into the hat for 2019 and the Irish Open ahead of the Open Championship, which will be held at Royal Portrush.
So, what is the fight for the 2019 Irish Open?
It's an interesting one. First on board was County Sligo, or Ross's Point, depending on what you want to call it. But County Sligo Golf Club, they've been doing a lot of work up there for the last 3-4 years, and they threw their hat in the ring first. But what has happened is the Irish Open became sort of a Rory McIlroy thing. He put his weight behind it. The Rory Foundation is heavily involved in it, and he's been sort of pushing the agenda of it for the last 3 years, and it's gone to some great courses. Now what they're doing is they're sort of switching. They're going to switch who's in charge of it. So Rory's continuing this year when it's up in Ballyliffin, and then next year it's going to be Paul McGinley and Padraig Harrington is also involved. So they're basically going to host it. And Paul McGinley has thrown Lahinch into the mix. And basically said that's where he wants it to be held. He won the South of Ireland there, which is one of the big, big amateur events many years ago. So he wants it to be there. And then a third course last week, I think it was, Portmarnock Links, which is not the original Portmarnock, which is something I get confused with. This is the one designed by Bernard Langer. That's also thrown its name into the pot. Because for one thing, that was bought 3 years ago, I think. And the new owner has thrown millions into the place, the hotel, into the course. So, you know, everyone's really intrigued by who's going to get this. And it's great that you've got such strong courses all going, we want to host the Irish Open the year that the Open Championship returns to this island. So it's going to be fascinating to see.
Oh, it is. I mean, it's politics at the highest level. Who's the fellow who, the billionaire who throws millions into a golf course in Ireland?
Sorry, say that again.
Who was the person who threw all the millions, built the golf course with a hotel?
J.P. McManus, I think about a dare here. Is that the one you mean?
Yeah, you said that one of the golf courses that's just thrown its hat in the mix has just had a hotel built there, and the new owner has put millions into fixing up the golf course, and I didn't remember which course it was.
Portmarnock Links. Obviously, the hotel was there already, and they've just refurbished it with huge amounts of money. The other course, which I suppose is going to be very high profile in the coming weeks, is Adair Manor itself. J.P. McManus, who's an Irish businessman, purchased that 3 years ago. It must be 3 years ago now, and has spent 18 months pouring huge amounts of money. And when I say huge, $30 million into the hotel. I don't even know how much money has gone into the golf course. You know, obviously that kind of information is being kept very closely under wraps. But, the hotel has been extended, and the objective is A, to host the Irish Open, but also to host the future Ryder Cup. So they got Tom Fazio in. He redesigned the course. And let me just say at this point that Adair, before it was redesigned, was probably the best parkland course in Ireland. So, you know, they've actually come in, they've taken the best parkland and gone, okay, let's start over and do something absolutely fabulous with it.
Wow. Have you seen it yet?
No. Again, it's another of these ones where it's very, very closely under wraps. That there are invitations going out to media at the moment. It's supposed to open in April. That's all anybody seems to know. It was supposed to open at the end of last year, but there were a couple of problems with, I think, some drainage issues were raising their heads. So it got pushed back, and now it's April. So, you know, I know I'm on a list somewhere, an invitation list to go down and see it and play it, and I cannot wait because, I mean, something that big is huge for this island anyway, for this country.
Absolutely. Did you, when you said tourists to Ireland, up 16% already?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, golf in Ireland obviously falls into the two brackets. You've got the links and then basically everything else. Now, the American market love coming here and playing the links. Now, it's not exclusively links, obviously, but most of what they do is the links. So that market for North America is up 16%. The last 3 months of last year, 2017, the number of visitors, now this is not golfers, this is visitors in general from North America, is up 16%. And a lot of those are obviously playing golf. I mean, certainly you talk to any of the links in the country and they will say that American business is up, which is fabulous. The downside is that the other courses are taking a bit of a hit. Certainly because our biggest market is obviously Great Britain next door. And with Brexit and the fall in value of the pound, that has hit us pretty badly. And as a result, they're not coming to Ireland. And a lot of people in North America are going, well, it's much better value now to go to Great Britain.
Wow.
So the Scottish market is doing pretty well. They're having one of the best years ever.
Interesting, but Ireland is up 16%. You're just not bringing in as much money as you would have.
Well, I don't know if that's the case in terms of bringing in more money. I mean, obviously, one of the big issues is just being continuing to sell a very high quality golf product, which is what we have. And then everybody knows that. I mean, you know, I'm not going to make any disparaging remarks about Scotland. I've played golf in Scotland several times, and it's absolutely fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I will say is that coming to Ireland, there's just no experience like it.
You certainly take the most beautiful photographs. This is Kevin Markham, a golf photographer and writer. And if you're on any of the social media, on Twitter, at Kevin Markham. Just go look at his photographs. Unbelievable. It makes you go, I have to go there, and I'd like to be there now, right now. You take us into your photographs, and I really appreciate the fact that you post them. It's just amazing. Do you plan on doing a book of photographs?
I'll be honest and say that, yes, I had aspirations to do it, and I've sort of learned through obviously having had another couple of books published over the years that it's a difficult market. The idea of a coffee book, coffee table book, has kind of gone. So there isn't a huge market for anymore. And yes, I'd love to do one. I mean, I was actually thinking maybe, you know, do a kind of like Kickstarter fundraising type campaign, and that's still in the back of my mind to do. But I think you can see so much online now that it's a little bit more difficult to make one of those books viable.
It's a good point. It's out there. You know, everybody's looking already. But to have it at your home and just to be able to open up and look at the pictures, the photographs are amazing. Kevin Markham, the books that he wrote, Hooked, An Amateur's Guide to the Golf Courses of Ireland, it's in its third edition. So you're working hard with this one. Is there a fourth edition coming?
Yes, I would certainly think so. I mean, the third edition, they reprinted it, and there should be a fourth edition somewhere in the future.
That's great.
A lot has changed in the Irish golfing landscape, and that's one of the reasons why I always push for another edition and say, look, the current book is no longer accurate. So, you know, I mean, I think my last book still has Skellig Bay, which is now this rather famous and growing reputation that is Hog's Head, which is down in Kerry, very close to Waterville. So, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that I need the book to change.
Right. Yeah, it's County Kerry again. We're at Hogshead, Waterville, opened last year. Brian Marshall and Tony Alvarez. Are they Irish?
No. They're I think they're in New York. I actually met Tony when I was down there. I got invited down by a friend of mine who is a hog, as they call themselves, and I got to play the course on a beautiful late summer day, and it was a fabulous experience going around it. So they've obviously put a lot of money into it too, and it's I think it's one of those. It's a bit like the Old Head. It's one of those things where it is just such an amazing experience that the experience is almost bigger than the golf course, if that makes sense.
I do.
So, this will be its first full season. It's going to be intriguing to see how it does.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, the animal on the hogshead banner, it looks more like a bear than a hog.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've actually got the scorecard in front of me because I knew, this hogshead was going to be mentioned, so
yes.
I got the scorecard, and
yes.
it's an upright hog holding onto a golf club.
Okay,
and,
so it is.
Yeah, I can see what you mean, but I mean, it's got a little curly tail, and it has got tusks, so I think you'll get away with the hog.
Maybe they're related.
Possibly.
Yes. So, Driving the Green, was a marvelous book. If you'd like to find out what it's like going around Ireland and going from place to place to place, you really get a sense of what you've got to be prepared for. Smaller roads, distances that you would think you can cover in a matter of, a couple of hours, could take a couple of days. Do I remember that correctly, Kevin Markham?
I think a couple of days is probably a little bit unfair on our road network, but it's not far off the mark, let's be honest. And I was also in an RV, which doesn't do the kind of speeds that a car can manage.
In an RV, yes. As most of us would like to be in an RV, just kind of tooling about and finding our way. So is Hogshead, it overlooks the Finglas, is it Finglas River?
Now, there you go. Well, I mean, it's obviously Waterville, so it's the actual Skellig Bay itself.
Okay.
But... yeah, you're right. There is something there, and I can't quite remember what it's called. Finglas. I think it's Finglas, yes.
Finglas. And Robert Trent Jones, Jr. Did it. He truly, I saw him over at Kapalua for the Century Tournament of Champions, and he's just so excited that this is opening. I should see if I can get him on the phone to talk about it, because he's all of them are children to him, all of his golf courses. How much work did he do on this course? Was it from ground up or redoing?
Well, it was redoing. I mean, Skellig Bay was there in existence, and some of the routing is actually the same. But, they've changed the actual terrain considerably. They brought in a lot of earth, and they moved a lot of earth. And from that point of view, it is different. But, I mean, if anyone played Skellig Bay, they'd recognize, the first, five holes probably. And I think after that, it just starts morphing into something very, very different. And, it's one of the... Their motto is built by friends, for friends, for fun.
Wow.
Now, that's an official motto or just like their unofficial motto, but it very much says what the golf there is all about because it's a course that has huge amounts of fun in it, and you're going to go out there and you're going to struggle to lose a golf ball. So the idea is you go out, you go around, you have fun, you come in, you're not beaten up, you go into one of the nicest clubhouses I've ever seen, and you sit down and you have fabulous food, fabulous drink. You look out over the golf course and you just sit back and you think that was just an amazing round of golf without it being so challenging that you come in going, geez, I'm not going to play that again.
You know what you just said? It's like captivating. You said you can't lose a golf ball. I mean, really? That sounds like a great golf course.
Yeah, you'll struggle. I mean, some of the elements are really, really interesting. I mean, they've got a Biarritz green.
Yes.
A punch bowl green.
Oh,
they've
yes.
actually got two greens for one hole, par three.
Wow.
So
it just sounds wonderful. It sounds very exciting. Our next subject has to be Royal Port Rush.
Yeah.
County Antrim. Where is that on your map?
That's very north. Middle of the island and very north.
Okay. Okay, what can we... It's beautiful. Absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it's a Harry Colt classic. It's it's a beautiful piece of ground. And for me, there was always... My problem with it was I was never a fan of the finish. And, of course, they've actually ended up doing away with that finish and building two new holes. Mackenzie and Ebert built two new holes. And they are absolutely sensational holes. You know, I mean, I remember seeing them for the first time and just going, you know, they couldn't have done a better job.
Wow.
So, they, and it's, you think that Royal Portrush was already way up in the top 100 golf courses in the world, and these two new holes and a couple of other little changes that they've made along the way is just going to push it even harder. So, I mean, I think it's an amazing experience. And, you know, I was lucky enough to walk the holes before they were open. And, you know, you're just there going, why can't I bring a golf club and hit a golf ball?
Yeah. Why can't you?
Yeah. Well, I think I'd have gone digging it up. I think that's the problem.
Is it true that Duke of York used to hang over at Royal Portrush back when it opened in 1888?
Well, no, that's before my time, Danielle, so I'll have to say I don't know.
You're going to defer to the history books on that one. I just think it's great. I think that's how it gets its royal designations, because somehow the royal family has to have some kind
Absolutely.
Of attack, becomes a patron and, or something. And the other final question is Dunluce and Valley Links. Are there two courses at Royal Portrush?
Yeah, there are two courses. The Dunluce is obviously the big one, and then there's the what's regarded as the smaller course, which is the Valley. And that's also had changes because that lost ground that Mackenzie and Ebert took for the big course. So they had to find, you know, new holes within the dunes. And I think what I've always found fascinating about the Valley is that you have all these golf courses. Ballybunion's got two courses, La Hinch has got two courses, so has Royal County Down. And then you have Royal Portrush. And the thing with Royal Portrush is their second course, the Valley, is a really good course that most people just go, oh, well, it's the second course, it can't be that good, I'm not going to play it. And I think it's a real shame, because if you took away the Dunluce, the Valley course would probably be mentioned in the top 20 or 30 courses in Ireland. But because it's the second course, it doesn't. But it's, you know, what the guys, Mackenzie and Ebert, did a fabulous job, and they've added a much, much better finish to the Valley course as well. And it's, I mean, I would recommend anybody who plays one should play the other.
And this is a man who knows all the Irish courses, and he's written books, Hooked, An Amateur's Guide to the Golf Courses of Ireland. If you're planning a trip to Ireland, you need to get this book. His fourth edition's coming out. He'll probably cringe if you read it and say, well, that's not true anymore. There will be some of those things because, as you can hear, golf in Ireland is evolving. He's a golf photographer and writer, editor, Destination Golf, author, of course, Kevin Markham. You can find him on Twitter, at Kevin Markham. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Danielle, thank you very much. Great to be on.
Aloha. We're going to thank the people for making the show possible. The Golf Club made possible by the great people at Futurestone, Creative Plumbing, Rainer Doors. Rainer Doors is the overhead door used to protect the Lamborghini showroom. Imagine protecting your home and your family using a overhead door that comes down nicely, opens and closes for you, so you're protected, you're in your home, and everything's taken care of. That's Rainer Doors. You can call them at 647-2056. Futurestone's master craftsman, turning your building, your warehouse, your showroom, your home project into artwork. I'm always stunned when I see the concrete that looks like polished marble in a way. It's awesome. Do you know that that's concrete? No, I had no idea. Natural Stones, they specialize in the Brazilian quartzite flagstone, if that's your preference. They do AquaPave on-site stormwater source control systems. So important. And, of course, the interlocking pavers. Futurestone, only the best. And Creative Plumbing, whether a building, a shopping center, a store, a custom home, or a townhouse, or a new build, or a renovation, yes, they do it all, and they'll repair that problem that just cropped up in your life in the worst possible moment. You give a call to Creative Plumbing because it's got to be done right, and they do it right at Creative Plumbing. And Claude Brousseau, Master PJ Professional. I just want to say Claude at the Kahili course is where they're having one of the Hawaii Junior Golf Days. And David Havens from the Havens Experience is over with Claude, so it's going to be great. Thank you for your mana. May you hit the sweet spot every time. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
You've has been listening to the award-winning Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2018.